all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your hosts for today's program, Dale Thronberry and Bob Gould.
And good morning, America. Good afternoon and good evening, depending upon where you're at. How's that? Well, you can you have no idea, folks. It's our first time. We're back on the air. Yeah, 2 months. 2 months it's been. Absolutely 2 months. But that's right. We broadcast all over the world. How can you do that? Well, we can do that on webcast. Is that what they call it? Yeah, webcast.
No, we're on the internet.
We're on the internet. All right.
We're streaming on the internet.
We're streaming.
On Wham! Talk 1600.
Talk?
That's where we are.
Yes. And there we podcast, right? We do. No, we haven't. That's available, folks. But it's Bob Gould, my partner, 11 years with this guy. And you know what? Once again, another week, we got different shirts on, but that's okay, different colors.
That's why we do radio.
That's why we do radio, and that's why we've been partners, because we don't always think alike, and it makes it very interesting. We love coming here. We've found our home. We used to be here many, 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 many years ago, and we're back, and we're home on Talk 1600 WAAM. And also with me, my co-host today is Mr. Jim Falsone. He's the president of Legal Help for Veterans. So anything, you know, we're hearing all this stuff that's going on and all over about VA. And, well, you know what? You do have friends out there. All my veterans that are listening and non-veterans, there are friends out there. And Jim Falsone, Legal Help for Veterans, is just one of the help
thank you, Bob.
Is available.
I appreciate that. That's great. Thank you.
Yes. And he's also a Navy person, right? I don't know. What do you call it? I don't want to call you a
Navy veteran.
Yes, just a
sailor.
Just a veteran would be fine, particularly here in front of Memorial Day. I do have a few announcements for you.
Well,
if you
before
don't mind.
We get to that, I do want to qualify something. Folks, we love hearing from you. We love hearing from you. But when we have specific programs like today, it's going to be on D-Day. We just ask that you keep it topic specific when you call. And you can call us today at 844-838-1600. That's right. We pay the freight. 844-838-1600. If you have a question for one of the authors or a comment on D-Day, the generals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So keep it topic specific. We will have open mic time. Is that right, Dale?
Right, and we want to give you the local number. If you're listening to Wham! Talk 1600 in southeastern Michigan, give us a call at 734-822-1600. That's in southeastern Michigan. Of course, if you're listening around the world, you can give us a call at 844-838-1600. That's 844-VET-1600.
Oh,
how'd you like that number?
That's real cool. And you were able to do that. You put all that together.
Yes,
that's
we
cool.
did.
And,
okay.
And I'd also remind everybody they can go to the Facebook and like us on Facebook and leave us questions on Facebook. We'd be glad to respond to you there as well.
Facebook. Right. I don't Facebook, but you two gentlemen do. So, and we're also going to be, well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are coming up. Dale, do you have something?
Are you talking about events or are you talking about what we're up to?
Both. Choose.
Well, choose. Well, what we're up to is that we've just purchased some nice portable remote recording equipment and microphones and mixers and all kinds of things, and we're going to start doing some podcasting, which is where we're not necessarily going to be on the air just Sunday afternoons. We're going to be on the air any time we want to be, but we're going to let everybody know where we are, when we are, and perhaps we can have a couple of events that we're going to be promoting with Legal Help for Veterans and with General Carol Ann Falsone. She's
another partner,
and
she's a general, folks.
Yes, we've moved up into the world. We've gone beyond warrant officers now and colonels. We're in general world.
On a PFC.
And but she's a strong veterans advocate and does programs and presentations all around southeastern Michigan. So we're going to be trying to do some of her presentations live with the new equipment.
And she was an Air Force general, which we have not had a whole lot of representation here. I don't know what's wrong with the Air Force people. Don't really, I don't know, they must get something.
Well, they enjoy their careers and they stay in.
Yeah, or
there are some other branches where you don't stay in quite as long.
That's the 4 years. So, but folks, we're going to be doing a lot of remote. So yes, we want your ideas. We just don't have open mic when we have authors on, et cetera, when it's a specific topic. So we will have open mic. We're going to be having a program on jobs next week. Dale's going to be
right. We're going to be talking about jobs. We're setting up a new tag on our website for veterans jobs called "Put a Vet on Your Team," and we're going to start listing companies that are hiring vets or specializing in hiring vets. And so when we get that all going, we'll let you know. You can go right to our website. Boom, go find it. If you can't find a job, we'll find one for you somehow.
You know, that's really true. Jim, you have a comment.
I do. I just was, since Memorial Day is tomorrow and there's parades and events all over the place, I did want to mention one. One in Novi, Michigan, American Legion Post 147 is one of the sponsors, as well as the PVA, the Michigan Paralyzed Veterans of America, at the Civic Center there in Novi. And I pointed out particularly because Brigadier General Carol Ann Fossone is the keynote speaker. And after that, another one that's probably will be a little more rip-roaring will be Rolling Thunder, Thunder Rolls.
Oh, that's the motorcycle guy.
It is, in Belleville, Michigan on Memorial Day. You can begin registering at 11 a.m., and the ride starts at 1, and the memorial service from 2 to 2:30. And, again, the general will be attending that at the Belleville Veterans Memorial on Horizon Park on High Street. So
you know,
a couple of things to pass along. And one more I'll get it out, which is our friends at Yankee Air Museum are having a veterans event, a veterans seminar on Wednesday, June 11th from 10 to 2. It's free to veterans to learn about their benefits.
And what's kind of – how about a little contact information, Jim?
Absolutely. The way to RSVP is 734-740-8867. And as I say, it is free to everybody there to attend at the Yankee Air Museum. But they would like you to register so they can figure out how much food to bring in to feed everybody for that event.
Right,
so.
Right. And we encourage everyone to go out tomorrow wherever you are living and go to a parade, put your flag out, let everybody know that you support your veterans. And we got to remember that Memorial Day really is not, you know, it's for our friends and comrades who have passed away. And that's why we want to make sure that you get out there and do that. You know, Memorial Day is for those who have passed away. Veterans Day is to celebrate all veterans. And I do have a little historical note.
Can I also add something?
Sure.
Memorial Day is 100. We covered that last week, by the way. And by the way, folks, go to our website. We have our archives there. Any programs that you want to know about, you want to make a copy of, you want to send it away to everybody that you know because this is a great program and we're so cool, then you want to go to our website, veteransradio.net. Be sure it's .net. We have the archives and everything else. We talked about that last week. It's the 150th anniversary of Arlington.
Right. Right. But I do have the general order here. It says Headquarters, Grand Army of the Republic, General Orders Number 11, Washington, D.C., May 5th, 1868. And this is said the 30th day of May, 1868, is designated for the purpose of strewing with flowers and otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in defense of their country during the late rebellion. This is the Grand Army of the Republic. Probably the Grand Army of the Confederacy is probably says something different. We know that. But they both came about at about the same time, and that's really important to remember. I said Memorial Day is a day of remembering the men and women who died while serving. Veterans Day is celebrating the service of all U.S. veterans. I have one more event that I did want to mention real quick, and that is locally at the Ward Church up in Northville, Michigan. And this is next Saturday, May 31st at 6 p.m. in the sanctuary. They are putting on their Patriotic Pops concert honoring all veterans. That's May 31st, 6 p.m. in their sanctuary. That's at 40,000 Six Mile Road. That's at the corner intersection of Six Mile and Hagerty. And it's a great concert. Gary Lilly and I went a couple of times, and we enjoyed it immensely. I've got a good friend, Jim Abernethy, who's in the choir along with his wife, Joanne, and the music is amazing.
I've heard that.
And if you can fit
in, I was there last year. It was
beautiful. If you can fit in your uniform, wear it.
Yeah.
And at 6 o'clock, 6 p.m.
Only our hat still
well. Well, no, I know my hat doesn't even fit. Anyway, that's the Ward Church at 40,000 Six Mile Road, May 31st, 6 p.m. in the sanctuary. For more information, go to wardchurch.org.
You know, and folks say, well, why are you telling us that? I live in California. And, well, I'll tell you why. Because we want you to go to your local. Check it out. Google VFW, American Legion, one of the celebrations, whenever these things are coming up, and go and support your local veterans. Support those local veterans. That's what we talk about here. I have one more that's going to be in Dearborn. The Dearborn Parade is being sent to us by our good friend, Joan Ford. Hello, Joan. She's been a longtime listener and a very big supporter. Hello to you. And this is about, okay, William Spanky Gibson, Jr., a retired U.S. Marine Corps Master Sergeant. Those guys never retire. Nah. Nope. Will lead Dearborn's 90th, he's older than me, annual Memorial Day Parade and deliver the keynote address on Monday. He's going to be the Grand Marshal. So he was a gunnery sergeant and injured in Iraq and then became the first above-the-knee amputee to return to ground combat. Who knew that? Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
I thought, you know, they always talk about the $1 million wound. The guy lost his leg. I guess it wasn't $1 million, right?
There's quite a few veterans,
yeah,
and I think
it's
a program we're going to do, that have returned to combat with prosthesis.
Yeah, the advances because of the research money DOD is putting into those issues as well as the VA is astounding. It really gives these guys a very fulfilling and useful life.
Yes, it does.
And folks, I'm only being facetious when I talk about that. I think it's way cool of all the things that they can do today and that they are doing. Speaking about things being done, well, we have a very surprised guest, and kind of had to fit her in the last moment. Applebee's. Applebee's is a proud sponsor of Veterans Radio, and they have all kinds of special programs, hiring programs, complimentary programs. In fact, on Mondays, I'm not going to tell you all this. I'm going to bring on, I think I got that, Miss Jasmine Neves, who is the marketing director, you got it, for Applebee's in Michigan. Welcome to Veterans Radio, Jasmine.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a miracle.
Glad to have you.
We press buttons. We press buttons and it worked. Well, you are the marketing director, and you're the first person that I contacted because I found that, folks, do you know this, that on Mondays, it's a 30% complimentary off your meal because you're a veteran. Tell us about that, Jasmine.
Definitely. So Applebee's, just a little bit of background about who we are. The Shostak family is locally owned, and we're based out of Livonia, Michigan. So we are committed to Michigan and giving back to Michigan. And so in September 2012, the family purchased 65 Applebee's throughout Michigan. Primarily in the southern half of Michigan. So as far west as Benton Harbor, you know, as far south as Coldwater, we're all over the place. And so one thing that Applebee's is committed to is we're committed to giving back to our veterans. We appreciate their dedication, their sacrifice, and the support of their families. I think people forget about them. And so every Monday, we honor our veterans with a 30% off discount. So that's for active military service officers, as well as veterans. You can come in. You can just bring any form of military ID that you have, and we will give you 30% off your meal. We also have a 30% off discount card that we can give you at that time so that you can travel with that and enjoy that 30% off offer as well at any of our locations.
Well,
so
yeah.
We appreciate everything that they do.
Well, in fact, it's not just the 30%. Applebee's food, it's good. It's very
good. It's amazing.
What a surprise.
I mean, cheap food, you go, hey, man, I ain't going to eat that, but that's all right. I got 30%. So, no, it's very good. I love your steaks. I love those ribeyes. And everything always comes out nice, fresh, hot, well-cooked. The service is great. You really do. If you take that much time with the veterans and the way that you do with the help and walking into an Applebee's, that's absolutely fantastic. And there's something else. On the other days besides Monday, what else is there? Jasmine, why don't you tell us about that?
Well, you know what? We have half-price appetizers late night. So if you're out and about, you're looking for something to do with the family or just, you know, with your friends after a movie, Sunday through Thursday after 9 p.m., we do have all of our appetizers are half-price. And on Friday and Saturday, so 7 days a week, on Friday and Saturday, they're half-price after 10 o'clock. So there's something to do every day at Applebee's. I think you'll find that we are your neighborhood grill and bar. So we're invested in our communities. And in addition to our 30% off Military Mondays, we also give all veterans, active and reserve veterans, a free meal on Veterans Day just to show our support as well. And we do that across the company, across the country.
And, you know, that's well received, folks, because I've gone to a couple of those, and, man, the guys show up. And gals, What's that, Bob? Okay, guys and gals, men and women that have served. And by the way, you don't have to be combat. You got to be a soldier, sailor, marine, airman. Come on. By the way, on Tuesday through the other rest, is there also a 10% that I hear something like that? What about that, Jasmine?
Yep, that's available to use during the week as well.
And Jim's got something.
Yeah, Jasmine, I think you hit on it. Applebee's is a family-owned business. The Shostak family is well known for its philanthropy and giving back to folks, and I really think that what Mark and Dave have done here with making sure that the veterans are acknowledged for the work demonstrates what you get when you visit and support family-run businesses. So please tell the Shostak family that we here at Veterans Radio really appreciate what they're doing.
Hey. Dale, you have anything to add?
I will.
Dale, you got...
No, I do not, except that we do have a gift card for somebody.
Yeah. Well, we do. And somebody today...
Today.
Somebody, one of the callers, remember, folks, don't call in with anything unless it's topic specific. I got to say that. Topic specific. Right. And we're going to pick one of our callers today. So Nina will do the screening, right? Nina. Oh, by the way, folks, there she's with us. She followed us. You know, we headed out in the Conestoga wagons going out into the prairie. And who was following us and followed us right there? And that's Nina. Nina, how you doing? There she is. She's waving to everybody. Good. Okay. Well, that was Applebee's. That was all the little news that was fit to deliver. So we'll be right back right after this very important message with our authors, Mr. John McManus and Mr. Kevin Hamill. And that is going to be regarding D-Day. It's coming up very shortly. Don't go away. You don't want to miss it.
Like a douche, another runner in the night.
Battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project, we never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
Captain Eric Lawrence was training Afghan soldiers when his truck was hit by an IED.
I sat home alone for months. I didn't want that anymore. I wanted to go back to work. PBA helped me write my resume, got me a job interview. I got the job.
Paralyzed Veterans of America, changing lives, building futures. To learn more, visit PVA.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
There ain't going to be no war, and that was kind of like, I know, a lot of those old tunes have these big introductions, so they don't get right to the ending. That's what I was hoping they were going to, because we're going to talk about that right now. We're going to talk about D-Day, the 6th of June, 1944. Ooh, where were you? I was around. That's right. I was around D-Day, the 6th of June. And when the mood was, Americans didn't want to fight no European war. They didn't want to go there. They felt that was, it was just about split the population as to whether we should ever get involved. So instead we did the Lend-Lease. President Roosevelt had, and Congress got together, so we gave them airplanes and tanks and guns and all kinds. That was our being involvement, and so we Americans really didn't really want a war. And with me today on the program, here we go. Oop, push the buttons. Just cut somebody off. Good. I think you're going to have to call John McManus again. I know we have all new buttons, but right now, and I have Kevin on the line. John will be with us in just a second. So, Kevin, was Overlord necessary?
Oh, very much so. You know, the way to defeat Nazism in Hitler's Germany was to really go the fast route, and that was to enter Europe through France, liberate France, and then just attack Germany. And drive towards Berlin.
And by the way, folks, with me, we're scrambling around here. That's okay. With me on the line right now is Kevin Himmel. He's a historian for the U.S. Army's Combat Studies Institute. He's written many narratives on the war in Afghanistan. He's also, and I love this, and by the way, Kevin, somebody stole my copy because I loved it too, the Patton's photographs, and we'll talk about that before.
That's horrible. That's a terrible thing.
Oh, they did. They ripped it, man. Some lowlife coming, it looks really good. And after the party, it was gone. So somebody liked it, too, and I'm sure I'll find out who the cretin was that did that. So, Kevin, and do we have – no. Are we able to get John McManus on the – we're still working on it. Okay, good. All right, Kevin – all right. Now, you're saying, yeah, all this that we got, and we have to stop the rocket launchings. The V-1s are being, and that was up in the north there, and also concentration camp liberation. But the Russians were coming from the east. They're kicking all kinds of they're kicking it. They're coming from the east. The Germans are being come back. The Allies were advancing from the south. Greece had been liberated. And we're coming up through Italy. We had that, and we're bombing Germany daily from the north. And the Luftwaffe was decimated. We controlled it. Why Normandy? What's the whole point?
Well, you know, the German reserves that were being held in France, ready to repel us, if we didn't go in or if we did not succeed in Normandy, Hitler then could take those divisions, turn them, you know, east. And give what he believed was going to be the knockout punch to the Russians. Air power can only do so much. Patton even said that air power cannot gain ground or take prisoners, and that's how you win a war, by gaining ground and taking prisoners. So it was going to require a land war to defeat Nazi Germany. And ground zero for that land war was Normandy, where it was all going to begin. And it's such a significant part of American history, because D-Day, 6th of June, is the day that the United States steps up from being the poor cousin of Europe to being the world power that it is today. You know, previously in North Africa and Sicily, we could only field a corps and then maybe an army, but D-Day is the point where America is going to step over Great Britain's power and really take the reins. But to do that, we had to get that lodgment on those beaches, and vital to that was Omaha Beach, because that lay dead center between the British beaches and the American beach at Utah Beach.
Well, I'm going to get right to that in just a second, because we did make absolutely all this technology does work, because our other guest author today, John C. McManus, all you've seen him on television, American Heroes Channel, you've seen him on Discovery, you've seen him all over the place, and plus he's been on Veterans Radio about five times. He has written numerous books on World War II, and he serves as a member of the editorial board of World War II magazine. And I have in front, by the way, that's on our website. You can go to www.veteransradio.net. Go to the bookstore. Dale's been putting that all together. He's smiling right now as he's looking through the glass. And today's author, John C. McManus, wrote The Dead and Those About to Die. the Big Red One at Omaha Beach. John, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me on, Bob.
Here we go. Back to now I have both of my guests. And when they decided to do, all right, they just, to me, I'm going, that's certainly going to be a lot of people are going to die to have this landing. And there's so much at stake, and yet they went ahead with it. But where and at what time of the year did they decide upon that? Which one of you two want to? John, you want to take that?
Sure. Normandy is actually a second choice for the Allied planners. As far back as the end of 1941 and early 1942, British planners were thinking in terms of a possible invasion on the continent someday. And you'd had some early planning, really of a more tangible sense, in 1943, which lays the foundation for what they're eventually going to do. Calais, which is farther to the east with more port cities, good low ground beaches that are suitable for armor and for other vehicles, and is very close to Germany and thus, you know, the vitals of Germany, would have been the first choice, but the problem with it is it's so heavily defended. So Normandy becomes a kind of a tangible second choice, because it still has some port cities. It's close enough to have a nice turnaround on resupply and also on air support. It has suitable beaches, but, of course, the terrain isn't anywhere near as good as Calais. But the game the Allies wanted to follow is to make the Germans think the invasion was coming at Calais when, in fact, it was coming at Normandy.
Wow. Here we go. Halfway. Can you believe that? Halfway through, Jim. But we're going to be able to spend the next half hour with John and Kevin. And so we're going, John, I want you to stay right there. Kevin, I want you to stay right there. Hold on to your thoughts, because we're going to get into the equipment, German defenses, and everything else right here on Veterans Radio, honoring D-Day, the 6th of June, 1944, Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Captain George Mallon charged two machine guns under heavy fire. Details after this.
I am a United States sailor.
I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, and I will obey the orders of those appointed over me.
I represent the fighting spirit of the Navy and those who have gone before me to defend freedom and democracy around the world.
I proudly serve my country's Navy combat team with honor, courage, and commitment. I am committed to excellence and the fair treatment of all.
I am a United States sailor.
Becoming separated from the balance of his company because of fog, Mallon, with nine soldiers, pushed forward and attacked active German machine guns, capturing all of them without the loss of a man. Continuing on through the woods, he led his men in attacking a battery of four 155-millimeter howitzers, which were in action, rushing the position and capturing the battery and its crew. In this encounter, Mallon personally attacked one of the enemy with his fists. Later, when the party came upon two more machine guns, Mallon sent men to the flank and silenced the guns, being the first one of the party to reach the nest. The exceptional gallantry and determination displayed by Captain Mallon resulted in the capture of 100 prisoners, 11 machine guns, four 155-millimeter...
Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The cats have seen too.
Oh, yeah. Andrew's sister. And they were really, really helping sell bonds and bringing about the spirit of America back at that time. And, of course, that is a bugle woogie, no, the boogie woogie bugle boy. There you are. Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon a great crusade toward we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over oppressed people of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us beseech the blessings of Almighty God upon this noble undertaking. So said the Supreme Allied Commander, General Dwight D. Eisenhower, and every troop that was involved in D-Day got a copy of that. John, tell us a little bit more about Eisenhower.
Eisenhower is a guy for whom the Army has allowed his life to take off. He came from a kind of a hardscrabble family in Kansas that was somewhat upwardly mobile, but not a whole lot of means and wealth. He went to West Point because he was attracted to soldiering, but also liked the idea of a free education. And he finds that in the Army, he's in great demand generally as a staff officer because he's someone of exceptional competence and reliability, and his writing and communication skills were basically off the charts. So he hadn't really had many command billets, and he hadn't seen much combat on the eve of World War II, but he'd gotten the eye of a lot of senior officers who felt that he was the kind of person who could lead a multinational coalition. So by 1944, he'd had a great deal of experience doing just that, North Africa and in the invasion of Sicily, and he had earned a great deal of respect from foreign officers and foreign leaders, most notably the British, of course. And of course, you know, as Kevin pointed out very well earlier, that D-Day is sort of the beginning, or at least figurative sense, of America's rise to superpower status and certainly leadership of the Western Allied coalition. And so there's no question but that the invasion's commander is going to be an American, and Eisenhower is pretty much the uniform choice.
And, John, this is Jim Fossone co-hosting here with you, with Bob, and your book, The Dead and Those About to Die, which just came out
May 5th,
really tells the story about a lot of men from middle America, off the farms or off the ranches. Captain Joe Dawson of Waco, Texas, is one that stuck out to me. I'd be curious, what were your sources? How did you develop the stories about the men, whether it's Captain Joe Dawson or Colonel George Taylor or General Wyman, the stories that the troops are telling about these guys and their leadership on that day are really something. I'm interested in your sources, and then maybe you can talk about each of the men.
Right. The great part of doing that book is I had an embarrassment of riches in terms of sources. Many of these men, including Dawson, including Taylor, including John Spaulding, Phil Strisik, folks like that who had key roles in Omaha Beach, left behind for us a lot of written material that we could draw from, and had given, in the case of Dawson, he'd given many interviews over the years before his unfortunate passing in 1998. And so it's, you know, there was a level of honesty there that allows a latter year historian like me to come into the mix and learn something about how to tell the human story. And in the case of others, you know, these were sometimes people I had known over the years or had corresponded with to some extent, or people who had been interviewed by other historians before their deaths. And beyond that, though, there was just an incredible volume of material of after-action reports and unit diaries, you know, people's personal diaries and memoirs and whatever else, that, again, kind of allows us to tell the human story. So in the book, you really do see this from the ground up. And Dawson is one of the compelling characters. He's a 30-year-old son of a very prominent Baptist minister in Texas at the time, and he himself had worked in the oil industry. And Dawson is very determined to kind of live up to what he thinks his family would expect and what his men would expect in his company that he'll command, G Company 16th Infantry, because he was new to command, and he felt like he had to prove himself. It's one of the reasons why he will be in the lead almost the entire way on D-Day.
I mean, I think, John, that's one of the fascinating things is that you express, and I think, Kevin, you probably see this in your research as a historian as well, the doubt that these men took into battle. It's not a movie. It's not a video game. I think you were able to express the doubt that they all took into the battle and whether or not they'd measure up. Would they measure up to what their mom and their dad and their men thought they needed to do? And that was a horrendous day for all of them.
I would agree with that. I would also add that, about going into battle with doubt, that was compounded by the fact that a lot of these men in these landing craft were landing in areas they did not recognize from the sand tables and the maps they had studied. And so here the ramp drops and they run out and they're looking at the terrain in front of them and saying, we've landed in the wrong place. That is going to cause them to pause and give the Germans a better time to sort of zone in on them. And, I mean, imagine if you're an officer, a lieutenant or captain who comes into the wrong place, what are you going to do? You're going to pull out your map to try to figure out where you are. You're going to use your binoculars to try to figure out the terrain in front of you. And then you're going to call over your sergeant to try to reorganize your men and to decide what to do. And you've just made yourself a perfect target for a German sniper sitting on a cliff, overlooking the beach. And bang, a certain degree of leadership has just been lost in the American Army. And so I think that the confusion leading, the immediate confusion leading into the battle, landing in that wrong place, is going to add to that doubt and make it even harder for those American soldiers to summon up that spirit to move inland, stay mobile, and figure out a way to get behind these German defenses, or at least crack them.
This is Bob back again, and when we're talking here, there were two commanders that were really in for the Germans that were in charge of the Atlantic Wall. That was General Rommel and General von Rundstedt. And both of them had different ideas. Rommel said to stop them at the beaches because that's where all the trucks and equipment will be all jammed up. They won't have many exits off the beaches. They'll be concentrated. If we can stop them there, the other landings are coming. Everybody's bunched up on them. We can just take it from the Rundstedt. Von Rundstedt said, no. Let them come in. We got panzers. That's what we have. We have superior. We don't have the air, but we have superiority in tanks, better equipment. Let them come in where our panzers can roll through the countryside and prevail. Well, why don't you tell us about that one? John, who won out?
Well, nobody wins out in a way. There's a kind of an uneasy compromise between Rundstedt and Rommel, and they're actually both field marshals by the time of D-Day. And Rundstedt believed that just as a matter of course, the Allies were going to get ashore as they had in previous amphibious invasions. So what mattered was to be able to counterattack them and basically bleed them dry. Rommel's concept, as you mentioned, was to stop them at the waterline, and I call this sort of the longest day approach because that's where that term comes from. He felt the day of the invasion would decide everything, and so he wants to heavily fortify the coast. So Hitler acts as a kind of an intermediary between these two guys and says, you know what, because you can't agree, I'll give Rommel some of what he wants, and I'll hang on personally myself to some of the armored reserves that both of you are going to want to control. So nobody was particularly happy about the setup. It was kind of dysfunctional, and it doesn't do the Germans any real advantage once the invasion happens.
Yeah, this is Jim here. You talked a little bit about sort of the confusion that when you arrive at the beach at the wrong spot, but also very interesting discussion, John, maybe you can shed some light on the equipment and the weight of the equipment that the men had to come ashore with and how that impacted those first few minutes on the beach, getting off the landing craft and getting up the beach.
Yeah, this issue has a significant impact on why Omaha Beach is as bad as it is and why we take the casualties we do. The average American assault troop at Omaha Beach is going in with about 70 to 80 pounds of stuff, and he's wet. And he's seasick, and he's been in his boat for 2 to 3 hours, so he's already not feeling good. He's disoriented. And at the moment when he really needs to move quickly in a very light fashion and present a very small target, instead he's moving like a tortoise. So at that stage, you're going to have a lot of people who are vulnerable and aren't really in good fighting condition, plus their weapons are not in good condition at that point because of the elements. So this leads to a lot of unnecessary casualties, and I kind of see this in a couple of ways as far as analysis. It's part of a larger story in which we as Americans tend to weigh down our soldiers with way too much stuff in the modern period. You really still see that in the 21st century wars. And in the case of D-Day, it reflects the planners thinking like logisticians, like suppliers, thinking, oh, we got to get all this stuff ashore. People have to have all this stuff, you know, as if they're going to be there at Omaha Beach for six
yeah.
months. They're not thinking like assault planners of, hey, all we need to do is take the beach and then we'll you know, deal with supply later on.
And John, did you find, and you know, I just want to jump in with, because it does say when they finally did breach the Atlantic Wall, and by the way, folks, it took about 2.5-3 hours. It was no big deal. Well, I mean, it was a big deal, but it wasn't a big deal. They were able to get through, and the men got through the draws. They got, did they want to stop or did they keep on going? Hey, we just fought for the day. Let's have a cup of coffee and talk about this. How did that work out?
Well, the natural inclination was always to stop. Once you were sort of out of danger, once you'd gained some objective there, is to kind of just slow down, take a rest. As I mentioned, many of these guys had been bobbing around in boats. They had been seasick. It had already been a long day by late morning. And so that was the commander's role, is to keep people moving and keep people moving inland. So by midday, I would say, I think it's too much to say Omaha Beach is taken at that point, but it's the beginning of the end for the Germans at that stage. The Americans had moved up behind the draws. They had neutralized and destroyed some of the key German fortifications. Things were getting better, and more people were coming ashore, but it was still Omaha Beach, and this is what the commanders had to really impress upon their guys. Omaha Beach was still a really dangerous place and not a good place to be. So you've got to have this continued inland movement.
One of the things that folks were able that was done, and I have to mention this because it was a big, of course you always hear, well, this was a thing that won World War II, but they had to get ashore, and there was a lot of consideration as to how they were going to get people ashore, troops, and a gentleman named of Jackson, what's his Andrew
Higgins.
Jackson
Higgins.
Andrew Jackson Higgins, swamp guy, yeah, hunted alligators and all that down in Louisiana. He knew how to make the boat. He said, I can do that. I make it out of plywood. They go, what's plywood? 1944, who had plywood way back then? They put a steel ramp in the front. They put a diesel engine in one of these things that holds 30 men, and it was made out of plywood. It was a big success. Tell us about that, John.
Right. Actually, by the time of the invasion of Normandy, most of the landing craft were made out of steel, the Higgins boats. The famous Higgins boats are what was called LCVPs, landing craft vehicle or personnel, and you could get about 32 plus soldiers on there, and that's generally what most of the assault sections were comprised of, especially around H hour. What was advantageous about the Higgins boat, it was the perfect transition craft. What I mean by that, you could have soldiers on your troop ship, such as the Samuel Chase, and then they would climb down nets and jump into the Higgins boats when it was time to go in and invade the beach. So you can transition that 3 to 5 miles to the beach, and the craft could put ashore at the beach, and it'd give you a little bit of fire support, too, because it had a three-man naval crew, and many of them were equipped with 50-caliber guns, you know, to provide some level of fire support for the troops. And then, of course, they could pull the ramp back up, turn around, go and get more troops or stuff.
Kevin, we looked at all the commanders here, and I'm looking at my list. There was Montgomery. He was in charge of the ground troops. There was somebody, British Air Marshal Tedder, who's commander of Naval Operations, Operation Neptune. But then there was, yeah, everybody's favorite, mine too, Patton. Kevin, what was Patton doing all this time?
Patton was training Third Army in the north of London. He really had no role in D-Day. The only thing his name was really attached to was a operation to fool the Germans to make them believe that he was going to invade in Calais. But he really didn't need to do anything for this. They were just using his name. I think he made one trip to East Anglia and walked around and had his picture taken so he could say he was there. And that got the Germans believing and holding the whole 15th Army around Calais. And it worked so effectively that once the American troops started landing in Normandy, British spies or German spies that had been turned were telling the Germans, no, this is just a feint to lure you guys to Normandy for the really big invasion that's coming through Calais. So Hitler held up his entire 15th Army north of Normandy that really could have just driven down and really given a heck of a punch to the American and British forces there. But instead, they stayed there, as one of the generals said, throwing pebbles at each other you know, with nothing to do while the troops and the Germans in Normandy were getting pretty well hammered by the Allies.
Jim, you have something.
I do. While General Patton did his job, which was to hold them waiting for him to do make the big move, John, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what General Wyman did that fateful day.
Yeah, Willard Wyman is one of the highest-ranking people on the beach at Omaha Beach. Really, it's a junior leader's fight that day throughout June 6th. And Willard Wyman was the second-in-command or assistant division commander of the 1st Infantry Division, or Big Red 1. He comes in at 8:39 in the morning, and he really plays an integral part in what happens at Omaha Beach. And the reason I say that, Wyman was an excellent on-site organizer. He was a very brave guy, strides around, and begins to give people a purpose and a job. Do this, do that, organize this, organize that. Here's how I assess the situation. And then, most vitally of all, he's able to get through some important communications to his superior, Major General Clarence Huebner, who was the division commander and is aboard ship all day, and tell him, look, we don't need more stuff. We don't need more vehicles, more freight and all that. So that's just going to get in the way and present more targets. We need more assault infantry to come in here and put maximum pressure on the Germans and buckle their defenses. And indeed, that's precisely what happens by late morning and early afternoon. And as one of Wyman's key aides, who's with him all day, will later put it, he says, without him, the beach would have gone. And that was his opinion.
Well, that's it. Oh, there we go. Coming up to our third break. Wow, the day is going by real fast. So stay with us, John. Stay with us, Kevin. We'll be right back. D-Day Omaha Beach right here on Veterans Radio on Wham Talk 1600. Don't go away.
Fairy godmother?
Cinderella's dream comes true because the glass slipper fits.
It's been.
In our world, the right fit can be just as important, especially when it comes to car seats. Always choose a car seat that's the right fit for your child's age and size to make sure your little pumpkin gets there safely every time.
Hop into you. Thank you.
For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. This message has been brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. Our landings at Cherbourg and the Havre area have failed to gain a satisfactory foothold, and I have withdrawn the troops. My decision to attack at this time and place was based upon the best information available. The troops, the air, and the Navy did all the bravery and devotion to duty that could be done. If any blame or fault attaches to the attempt, it is mine alone. July 5th, 1944, General Dwight D. Eisenhower, Supreme Allied Commander, he wrote that. He never delivered. Tell us about that, John.
Yeah, that note has become a key piece of sort of the Normandy legend. That Eisenhower, in the run-up to D-Day, as it got closer, he certainly realized there was the possibility of failure. And, you know, he especially realized that once he runs into weather problems and having to postpone the invasion. And, of course, he'd been so minutely involved with this that he knew all the things that could go wrong. And he was the kind of person who was going to take full and absolute responsibility. And he writes that note out just in case, you know, during the anxious periods when he doesn't know what's going to happen. And then he fortunately never had to use it, and the note was in his pocket, and he just happened to find it several days later after the invasion. And he gave it to one of his aides, and eventually it's been preserved. And I believe it's at the Eisenhower Library today.
Folks, I'm speaking with John C. McManus and Kevin Himmel. John wrote The Dead and Those About the... By the way, he's written 7 books, and they're excellent. But this book, The Dead and Those About to Die, it just came out, D-Day, the Big Red One at Omaha Beach. And Jim and I were talking about your style. And folks, boy, it's not just narrative that, hey, I feel like I'm right there. He actually did that with the words. When you get the, by the way, you want to go to Veterans Radio and go to the bookstore to pick that up. Wow, what a thing for the table. What a book for the table that you can have for everybody else. And what exactly that we were looking at is, well, go ahead, Jimmy.
Well, I think one of the things that surprised both of us as we read the book was how men would come in. You'd tell us about this poor private or this, actually there's a Coast Guard lieutenant in there that he talks about, and then they're gone. And I mean,
that's the way it was.
They're gone. That they've been shot, they've been they've died in the process, and it is you feel that loss, as I'm sure their families and their friends that day felt that loss.
There were times, John, that it was hard for me to keep, because you would say, and there's so-and-so from Pennsylvania. He was a pharmacist and led his men and everything, and then he was shot and gone. That's the way it was every day. John, tell us about that style.
Yeah, that's one of the things I hope to do in this book, is in a way to bring these people to life again, for lack of a better way to put it, as real people, because this was so long ago now. I mean, when you think about this, we're 70 years removed from this, and there are very few participants remaining, of course. And among those who were killed back then, that's been so long ago that it's very easy to lose sight of who they were as individuals. And I really kind of hope to bring that to life by gathering as much info as I could and allowing you to get to know them a little bit. And as you did, maybe get a sense of what that might have been like for the soldiers, who, of course, knew their buddies fairly well, and we're losing them. And so, you know, my goal was to humanize certainly those we lost on D-Day, but also, you know, those who survived it and, you know, lived to tell the story, that perhaps they can all come to life as young men again in a 21st century setting 70 years on.
Well, you've certainly done that, John. I think you've done a wonderful job in the book, and I think as historians, you and Kevin, at the end, don't just tell the story, you do bring it to life. But I also found interesting that you said, hey, I'm going to devote a whole section here to the errors that were made. And maybe you can tell us a little about that.
Right. There, you know, the plan, of course, in some ways is masterful, but it's like any plan, it had shortcomings. And a lot of things went wrong. There's way too much confidence expressed in the pre-invasion bombardment. That's another kind of American tendency to think that firepower will solve a lot of problems, and the ground troops won't have much of opposition, and that seldom plays out that way. They carried in too much stuff. They didn't really earmark enough shipping for medical evacuation, and that cost a lot of lives. They didn't necessarily have a full appreciation of the kind of German units that were in place that day and really had been there for about 3 months, so there was no excuse not to know more about them. You know, there were things like that we can look in hindsight and say, this should have been done better. And certainly I point that out, while also, I hope, conveying the larger message that in the main it was a remarkable effort, carried off very well, that as usually is the case, comes down to the valor of soldiers.
We're coming to the end of the program. Can you believe that, folks? We're going to have Kevin and John back again. We have not just about D-Day. We'll just talk about in general what happened after that. John, you got about 30 seconds, 20 seconds to give your final word.
Well, my final word is that I want to convey my appreciation to all veterans on Memorial Day, and just let you know that's what animates my work and how much I appreciate everything you do.
Kevin, final word.
I would repeat what John said and just say, you know, if you're not a veteran, just read some history. Either read one of John McManus's books or read a history article in World War II or WW2 History Magazine, and just be aware of your country's history.
Well, that's great. I would echo the same to all our veterans out there. Thank you for your service. For those who have gone on to their final resting place, I was with my dad yesterday at the Great Lakes National Cemetery with the family and my mom, and that was great. Thanks to all our veterans.
Well, we're getting down. 10 seconds, that's it. We're getting down to that, Jack. Get the countdown. So next week, you want to come back to Veterans Radio right in on Wham! 1600 Talk Radio. This is Bob Gould for Dale Throneberry and Jim Falsone and all you veterans and non-vets. You are dismissed.